Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Grand Canyon in Arizona is one of the best spots in the world to see a huge span of Earth history. A day's hike from bottom to top or top to bottom allows you to view over a billion years of Earth history. But an increasing number of Americans, many of whom are evangelical or conservative Christians, view the Earth's age skeptically. Well, my guest today is part of a group of Earth and life scientists, many of whom are Christians themselves, that view that skepticism with alarm. So they've created a new book that seeks to engage with those who believe in a young Earth philosophy. They look at their arguments, conduct a scientific inquiry through geology, paleontology, and biology of the Grand Canyon, and ultimately debunk a hypothesis known as flood geology, which suggests that the canyon was created by the biblically related event of Noah's flood. Their book, The Grand Canyon, Monument to an Ancient Earth, with the subtitle, Can Noah's Flood Explain the Grand Canyon, was written with respect towards this flood geology viewpoint, but through scientific inquiry, they demonstrate why this hypothesis is not scientifically plausible. My guest today is one of the team of scientists who wrote the book, Ken Wolgamuth, who is a lifelong petroleum geologist. He's also an adjunct professor and research associate at the Department of Geosciences at the University of Tulsa. He and geosciences professor Brian Tapp contributed to the book, and Wolgamuth joins me today here on Studio Tulsa. Ken Wolgamuth, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here with you.
This new book that you're a contributor to, The Grand Canyon, Monument to an Ancient Earth, what was the purpose of writing this book?
Well, some friends of mine who are Christian geologists recognized that in the Grand Canyon, there was material that was being presented to conservative church folks that described the Grand Canyon as being formed in 1 year by Noah's flood. And the vast majority of geologists, virtually all geologists, not quite 100%, but virtually all, recognize that the Grand Canyon was formed over long periods of time. And we were concerned about that segment of the church environment being taught material that does not factually fit the evidence.
Now, your book title, The Grand Canyon, Monument to an Ancient Earth, would suggest that is the focus of the book. But there's this subtitle, and I have to ask about it because it's raised eyebrows around the office. Can Noah's flood explain the Grand Canyon? Question mark. And I think the first reaction from people who look at that book is, oh my gosh, this is a book that's going to tell me that the Grand Canyon was created in a year. So why put that subtitle on if in fact you're making the case for an ancient Grand Canyon?
Well, we did put the main title as describing that, in fact, we recognize that the Earth is old, and that is where the evidence leads us. We did make the choice to use the subtitle as a question because there are several multimillion-dollar organizations that are taking theologians through the canyon on float trips and lots of Christians, and they describe the Grand Canyon as being formed in 1 year by Noah's flood. So that's where the idea comes from. Now, our response is that we as Christian geologists, recognizing that the Earth is old, that that body of evidence and that description does not represent the reality of what we see when we examine the geology of the canyon. So we wanted to try to engage the folks that have that view by seeking to draw them in with the context of a question, partially so that they may pick up the book, because if we described it as a statement why the Grand Canyon cannot have been formed by Noah's flood, they would probably dismiss it as being naturalists trying to cram science down their throats. With a question, we're really describing to them what geologists do. We ask questions, we gather lots of data, and then we make logical, common sense inferences as to what happened in the past, much like a detective, a cold case detective does. He's gathering evidence and what is the most reasonable inferences, and that's what we did with this. So the reader can read the evidence for themselves.
Now, one of the things I think was really interesting was that the book takes this sort of idea of a scientific inquiry. You have two views, and it weighs them. I want to say not completely equally, I mean, but you took the evidence that's there and weigh it equally of these two ideas. of the Grand Canyon, reflecting the age of the Earth, billions of years, and yet another one which says that it may be only 6,000 years old and that all of this was created within a year or so of the Great Floods. And you treat both ideas with respect, and then you just apply scientific inquiry. You look at all the evidences there, and slowly but surely, you debunk the idea of a young Earth.
That was our mission. And to have heard people say that we have respectfully presented both sides, is very comforting that we feel we have achieved that objective, because that was our mission to do so, to be able to have a science book that could be sold in a Grand Canyon bookstore, as it has become approved by the Grand Canyon National Park to be sold there. So we were very thankful that we're getting feedback that was achieved.
Now, as you go through the whole story of looking at this, the whole idea behind this young Earth vision of the Grand Canyon is a hypothesis, if you will, or just this belief in something called flood geology. What is flood geology?
Well, the source of it comes out of a segment of the Evangelical and Fundamentalist Church that looks at Genesis, and they describe it in their view as being narrative history, as though it's also describing the creation as narrative history in 6 24-hour days. However, Hebrew scholars that study Genesis 1 extensively recognize that it is not directly the same as narrative history in other segments of Scripture, but rather is describing important doctrine of creation, that God is behind the creation, and in fact, he did his creation over periods of time, and it's described there in Genesis as 6 days with an uncertain amount of time involved.
A metaphoric day, a God's day. It could be an era.
Yes.
Or even prior to our Earth eras.
Exactly.
When you're creating those heavens and stars and everything like that in Genesis.
And then when they get to Genesis 6 to 9, it describes Noah's flood. They've picked up the idea that Noah's flood basically reformed the complete earth in all ways, built the mountains, built in basically the 1 year of Noah's flood, because of some of the wording there that talks about the floodgates of the deep broke open. And they turn that not just into water, but they describe that as rocks and volcanic eruptions and things. And that component of evidence we just don't see in geology when we.
In fact, there's
geology.
One little section that actually looks at Mount Ararat in Turkey, which is what, a 15,000 foot mountain in Turkey, and says, could this have been created in a year? In fact, it concludes it couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and in fact, I heard one of the flood geology speakers within the last year and a half, and to a seminary audience, he described that the Rocky Mountains were formed in 1 month of the year of Noah's flood, the Appalachian Mountains a little later in a month of Noah's flood, and the Alps a little later in 1 month of Noah's flood, and that just does not fit geology.
That's not even the right chronology, is it?
No, that too.
I believe the Appalachians were oldest and the
That's correct.
The Rockies are youngest.
That's right. They're younger than the Appalachians.
Well, so you have a whole team of people, and you're looking at it from a variety of standpoints, from the rock geologists. You're coming at it really from a more tectonic side and looking at the fractures within the formations, which suggests the seismic activity and the tectonics that are a part of the canyon. But the other thing that's also really interesting about this book is this incredible photography. And really, this is almost like a short course in geology in many ways.
In fact, it is. And that one of our reviewers, as he read it, an individual who is a blogger, he has a chemistry background. But when he digs into geology, he does that fairly seriously. And I've seen things that he's written. And he described this book as probably the very best description of general methods of geology that are designed for people who don't want to take a full geology course in a college, and to give the basics of how we do geology. And one of our endorsers John Warmey said the same kind of thing. This is just an excellent primer in geology, even if one is not interested in the issues that we have included in the book about the Noah's flood and the flood geology idea.
Now, why does, when we think about the age of the Earth, why did we always turn to the Grand Canyon? Just for laymen, lay it out why the Grand Canyon sort of is the determinant of as best we know, the age of the Earth. Why does it become a debate point?
The Grand Canyon is not a debate point for the geoscience community.
No, of course not.
It's become a debate point because the flood geology folks take theologians through the canyon and up on the rim, they provide trips describing the Grand Canyon as having formed in 1 year. So the Grand Canyon and another locality that is heavily used by the young earth and flood geology community is Mount St. Helens. Mm. Neither of these have extra special significance to the geoscience community because we look at rocks everywhere. But these have become sort of the sounding boards for the young earth and flood geology community as they share their story in churches and seminaries around the
country. Now, why does Mount St. Helens play a role in this? Is it because of the huge pyroclastic flow that went down the side of the mountain when it exploded?
They noticed that it indeed was an explosive blast when it blew out in 1980. And probably the biggest thing that the flood geology community draws from that, there are two components. One is, with an explosive flow like that, at the edges of Mount St. Helens, where the sediments fell down, where the blast of the ash and material fell down, there was something like 30, 40, 50 feet of ash that was deposited in just a few hours or in a couple of days. So the argument they make, and the way it's said, is that geologists say that all sediments take millions of years to form, and that's just nonsense. That's not what we claim, but that's what the young earth community puts on it. So they said, well, if these sediments of 50 feet or 100 feet thick could form in 1 or 2 days, it's no big deal for the Grand Canyon, 5,000 feet, to have formed in 1 year. So they, it's misrepresenting what geology does to put a spin on it that they can tell non-scientists. Another factor related to the Mount St. Helens, I did describe the thick sediments that were formed, and the flood geology community takes that and applies that as though, therefore, the Grand Canyon formed. Another way the flood geology community has used Mount St. Helens is that a geologist collected some samples there and took them to a laboratory to do potassium-argon dating, okay? And they got ages that were very old, 300,000 years and 2 million years. And that gets communicated around the church environment. And here in my own state of Oklahoma, I heard one of those speakers, and when he presented that to the church that he was teaching to, he said, it doesn't take rocket science to know that radiometric dating does not work because this happened in 1980, but in fact they got old ages. Well, this is a misapplication of a method because the rocks that he picked up were rocks that had formed down below the surface.
They were just
millions
as old
of years before, and the volcanic explosion in the eruption event took those up out of the ground, and he picked those up and took them to the laboratory. So a geochemist, the group of geologists that do radiometric dating, would never have done that because they know that that particular sample, those samples would not be appropriate to try to get an age. Potassium argon is not suitable for use in just 20, 30, 40 years.
And that's one of the things that the book does bring out is that the part of the young earth folks are about basically trashing the idea of radiometric dating of rocks. They say it doesn't answer anything, right?
That's a perfect word, trashing the whole method. And they use Mount St. Helens that they communicate heavily, publishing books about it. And that's a common theme in the young earth writings.
Oh. Your particular section, which you contributed with Brian Tapp, looked at plate tectonics. And so how would you use your particular emphasis in geology to explain the age of the Grand Canyon?
We put the chapter there on plate tectonics to give the geological background of how the plates do move, to help give the context that mountains don't form in 1 year. These plates are moving at about 1 to 2 to 3 inches a year, and that's what builds mountains. And we use the example of the Indian Ocean crashing into Asia and put marine sediments up very high on the top of the Himalaya Mountains. So that's the biggest thing we had about plate tectonics. That was to start and prepare for our next chapter that Brian Tapp and I wrote that has to do with the fractures and the folds and the faults that we see in the Grand Canyon that demonstrates that these were not soft sediments when they were folded, which the claim is made by flood geology folks.
The idea that it was fresh sediment deposited by this flood that folded over on itself, and what you're making the case is, in fact, no, these were hard sediments that bended and folded over thousands, millions of years.
They did, in fact, fold, and then when we examine them in specific locations, and our book has diagrams that Brian Tapp has put the lines that demonstrate where the fractures are on the same fold that the flood geologist who takes theologians through the canyon shows them the fold and said those sediments were soft and they have no fractures. So he's just misrepresenting what's there. And yeah, that's what's so painful for us. And that's why part of the reason we wrote the book.
Now, as I mentioned, he says you're doing it through all sorts of geological steps. Of course, you're documenting all the different layers you see in the Grand Canyon from the very bottom layers of, what is it, the Voodoo Schist? Is that right?
We have the inner gorge of the canyon.
Oh.
Does have metamorphic and igneous rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually at the beginning of the Cambrian time period, then we have what is referred to as a great unconformity, which was a long passage of time between an erosional surface of those igneous and metamorphic rocks, and then the sequence of sediments that were deposited in the canyon are basically Paleozoic, which is the geological era that is represented by basically over a time period prior to the arrival of dinosaurs on the Earth. But it's the time period of hard-shelled animals that we have found fossils basically everywhere around the world.
Yeah. And so you take it from that point of view. You also tackle it from a fossil record. So you have paleontologists and biologists also contributing chapters to this story.
We were very careful to try to prepare the book with segments that cover the major components of geology. There's a whole section on sedimentary rocks, so that's when we describe the sedimentary rocks of the canyon. We have a section about geologic time, and we describe how geologists sort out the puzzle of the passage of time, and we show that, and that's where we have a chapter on radiometric dating. Then we have the segment on plate tectonics and fractures to see what we can learn about the passage of time and the nature of what we expect the canyon to be. And then we have three separate chapters that cover fossils. One are animal fossils, a second chapter is plant fossils, and then a third chapter is covering fossil imprints in terms of footprints and other evidence that is derived because animals lived there.
Yeah. My guest today is Ken Wolgemuth. He's a petroleum geologist and an adjunct professor and research associate at the University of Tulsa's Department of Geosciences. He's one of the contributors to a book titled The Grand Canyon, Monument to an Ancient Earth. Now, when we think about the Grand Canyon, a lot of times people just think of the Grand Canyon, but really one of the things the book makes clear is the Grand Canyon is just a part of the story. It begins as far north as Bryce Canyon and the Zion and even as probably far north as the Canyonlands in Utah. And it's a continual story of sedimentary layers that go all the way down to the very bottom of the canyon. So you're talking about the Grand Staircase, you're talking about Bryce, you're talking about Zion as similarly demonstrating this geologic record.
Yeah, the sequence of fossils that are there that geologists had worked out back in the 1800s included three broad windows of time that they referred to as Paleozoic, Mesozoic, and Cenozoic. And the words there, paleo means old, Meso means sort of middle, and Cenozoic means recent. The suffix zoic is animal life. So they had basically established this geologic timescale in the 1800s. So in the Grand Canyon area, it's the Paleozoic rocks from the Cambrian through the Permian that are displayed and deposited there, not completely continuously, but we have most of the periods there. Then going on north from the Grand Canyon, there are the Mesozoic rocks that represent and go on north toward Bryce Canyon of the younger rocks of the Mesozoic period and then up into the Cenozoic with Bryce Canyon. And that whole big sequence, of which we have a diagram, continuously from the base of the Grand Canyon up through Cenozoic to about central Utah and Bryce Canyon. So we've shown that whole sequence. It's referred to collectively as the Grand Canyon and the Grand Staircase.
Yeah. Now, one of the things, as you read through it and you basically make, you again prove the case for the old Earth with the Grand Canyon, how many people do you actually believe the idea that the Grand Canyon was created in a year and that the age of the Earth is, you know, measured in thousands of years?
We don't really have a poll that I know of that talks about the canyon explicitly, but we do have a number of polls that I'm aware of that talk about the age of the Earth. And one that I refer to was done by Lifeway Research, which is a segment of the Southern Baptist Church and their publishing effort. And they polled pastors, and from 30 to 45% said they believe that there was credible evidence that the Earth is young. So that's a very high percentage. Then I've also noted that some of the Gallup polls would indicate that approximately 40 to 50% of citizens across the United States believe that the Earth is 6 to 10,000 years old. And I, as a geologist, 15 years ago, I would have guessed that this was maybe 5 or 10%, and I was just simply quite wrong. It's huge now.
Now, you come at it, you come at this book not only as a petroleum geologist, but you're an evangelical Christian. What is that? How does that, I mean, can you reconcile that percentage coming from, you know, again, this geologic background and your own faith tradition?
Well, I grew up in a very conservative faith tradition. And science was always presented as, we're going to go out and look at God's creation and see what's there honestly and make reasonable inferences, because we see God as the creator and we also see him as continually active in the sense that he established the laws of nature. So he is sustaining with his providential care over creation. And we're persuaded, as with the science community, that in fact, the laws of nature have remained stable through geologic time periods. So what do the laws of nature, what are they like to produce what we see in the Grand Canyon? So when I've seen, and the young Earth perspective and the flood geology perspective of the Grand Canyon, for us here in the United States, really got started in 1961 with the publication of a book with the title The Genesis Flood. And it was a theologian and a hydraulic engineer that wrote that book, and they basically described it, the Noah's Flood, as basically depositing most of the sediments around the world, and the sediments that would include the sediments of the Grand Canyon. And this material was picked up and accepted, which, when I finally heard about it, was a great surprise, because it, the geology in that book is not, it's just not geology. It's basically a theological overprint and then creating a hypothesis that, when it's tested, fails. But an elderly pastor in the conservative community helped me understand a little bit why it's been accepted as much as it has across our culture in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Doesn't answer all the questions, but at least it helped me. He said, Ken, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, when he was in seminary and being a pastor, he said, the tone of liberalism here in the United States that more or less rejected the truth claims of Scripture, they felt so battered and bashed by the liberal overprint that was just sweeping across our country that they thought this book, The Genesis Flood, was a reasonable, viable understanding of geology. And they just never investigated or never inquired with the geoscience community of Christians that that book is not a credible book with respect to the science that it presents. So eight of us who are authors of the book are in the faith community. So to hear that material presented at the Grand Canyon and in churches across our country is very distressing. I'm very exercised by it. And we just had to do something because with dishonest material and falsehood spreading across the church, we couldn't keep quiet.
Yeah. Well, how many people do you think you'll shift an opinion about? If they do pick this up, seeing that subtitle that you said was intentional to engage them, how many minds do you expect to change?
This is something that probably will not be changing in a few years, but I've already heard a theologian on whose campus we were able to present a workshop 2-3 years ago. He's beginning to see a change of tone, at least a little bit, and the attitude across the church. I am making very focused effort to try to reach some of the very highest level of theologians and seminary presidents in our evangelical community. And it's not really our responsibility as scientists to try to do the changing. Our responsibility is really just to communicate the truth that we see about the Grand Canyon. And then those are the church leaders. It's going to be up to them. I know individually I've impacted several people because they've told me so. And when I read material, I recognize that there has been an influence and they express appreciation. Just this morning or yesterday, I sent several files to a gentleman up in Minnesota who will be engaging with a pastor who has a young earth view and he needed some material as backup. So thankfully, I don't take really a burden of what the results are. I'm seeking to follow what I'm called to do and be prepared to describe God's creation truthfully. And we do have impact and we get invited to places that really appreciate our coming.
The name of the book is The Grand Canyon, Monument to an Ancient Earth. Ken Wolgamuth, thanks very much for joining us.
And thank you so much for the opportunity. I do appreciate it.
Ken Wolgamuth is an adjunct professor and research associate at the Department of Geoscientists and one of the scientists contributing to the book, The Grand Canyon, Monument to an Ancient Earth. He'll be signing the book this Sunday from 1 to 3 at Barnes & Noble on 71st Street. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.